Good afternoon. This is Stephen Dinan, your host of Next Evolution of Health Summit. It's been a very very deep and wonderful day already, and I'm sure we're in for another treat with Bruce Cryer of HeartMath. I'll be introducing him in a moment. This is going to be a little different format than the previous ones. We're just going to have a half an hour, but we will try to take some Q&A later on in the half an hour. So we'll move quickly and roll from here, and afterwards we'll have a little time for groups. So first, what I want to say is Bruce Cryer has spent the past 25 years researching and teaching innovative approaches to maximizing health and organizational performance. He's the president and CEO of HeartMath LLC, which helped launch the nonprofit Institute of HeartMath in 1991. He's got a pretty extensive bio working with all sorts of leading-edge health system organizations and different colleges of healthcare executives, and he's really been considered one of the top thought leaders in personal excellence and leadership by Leadership Excellence magazine. So he's the co-author with Doc Childrey of the book From Chaos to Coherence and lives in Boulder Creek with his wife. So Bruce, welcome to the Next Evolution of Health.
Thank you so much, Stephen. It's a real delight and pleasure to be here.
Great. Well, it's always nice to start with a little bit of background. You know, so you've devoted your life in many ways to the heart as a vehicle for kind of whole system healing. And what originally put you onto that path?
Well, kind of a number of things. Since my teenage years in the 60s, was all very interested in social causes and ways to empower individuals to make a difference in the world. And like many of my generation, kind of got into health foods and vegetarian diet and raw foods and sprouting everything I could think of to eat. And this is all back in the 70s, really. And my initial career was actually in performance. I was an actor and singer and dancer in New York and did a number of shows there and had a terrific few years. But I found even though the career was exciting and New York was an extremely exciting, dynamic place to be in the 70s, I found there's a deeper interest of mine, which was my own personal growth and how that would impact health and well-being. And in those days, I had started to meditate, doing a lot of yoga, tai chi, et cetera. And with the interest in health, it just became more and more what I really wanted to focus on as opposed to just being on stage entertaining people. And that precipitated a move to the West Coast and to the Bay Area in the late 70s. And been working really in the field in various ways, from nutritional side of things to the biotech side of things, and now with my long involvement with HeartMath, to really the whole being. How do our emotions impact our health, and how do the thoughts and feelings that we go through every day, and the stresses that we live with, and the health challenges we have, affect every aspect of our life. So it's been a long interest and a long journey, and made more relevant as I have aged, and as I've had more life experience under my belt, and then had a chance really to, on a professional level, get into a deep level of understanding of the healthcare system through HeartMath's work. For the last 10 years, we've had a significant focus on healthcare. I'm sure many of the listeners, many of the viewers of the webcast, are familiar with HeartMath because of our M-Wave technologies, which one's a software application that's a type of biofeedback, and the other's a handheld device, which is likewise a type of biofeedback, both of which look at the heart and how to regulate our heart and regulate our emotions for the benefit of our health and well-being. And when we introduced the first version back about 10 years ago, we found that there were many people within the healthcare world, many healthcare providers and then some hospital systems that were not only intrigued by the technology, but intrigued by the idea that we could teach people to regulate their emotions, reduce their stress, build their resilience, and in the process, not only improve their own health, but also improve that which they do in healthcare, give better care, better outcomes, et cetera. So as that started to unfold in the early part of this last decade, I got more and more involved with it myself, personally, and started working on the hospital side especially, and more and more with healthcare providers. And as you mentioned, some of the big hospital systems that HeartMath works with, like Kaiser and Stanford and Mayo and others, I had a chance to work directly with some of those leaders and nurses and other staff. So I got to gain a kind of on-the-ground understanding, if you will, of how healthcare works and some of the challenges that people trying to give great care and provide a balanced healing environment what they're facing today. So it's been a for me personally, I love working on that side of the world, if you will. People who are involved with healthcare, for the most part, picked that profession, that calling, not because of the hours or the potential for fame or ambition, certainly not for money, but because of a genuine desire to care and to help others. And I think for many in healthcare, the fundamental message of HeartMath, which is to learn to live more from the heart, to care more for oneself, to extend that care to others in very practical, simple ways, resonates very deeply with people in healthcare. They wish they could just do that and be away from all the morass and chaos of that is called U.S. healthcare today. So that's a little bit of background, a lot more details, but that's, I think, plenty for now.
It's interesting, as you say, the motive for so many healthcare professionals is the care component, and then that's often what gets overwhelmed or marginalized by all the different, you know, drug-focused techniques. And I wonder if you could share a little more about the research that demonstrates how important things like you're saying around emotional resilience and being able to tap into the heart and compassion that for actual health outcomes.
Yeah, you bet. Well, there's sort of the downside research and the upside research. The downside research meaning there's now an overwhelming body of evidence showing the connection between stressful emotions, anxiety, depression, and problems with our heart, severe problems with our heart. One recent example is, we've heard the concept for years that she died of a broken heart or he died of a broken heart. There's actually now a clinical definition called Takotsubo cardiomyopathy, which is exactly what's called now broken heart syndrome, linking a severe emotional tragedy with the failure of someone's heart. Often it's seen in spouses, who lose one and then dies fairly soon after. So that's one example, but there's many, many examples, even more commonplace, if you will, where just workplace stress, increasing our chance of heart disease as much or more than high cholesterol diets or even smoking. Long-term studies showing that people with significant marital strain or significant job stress are at far more risk of developing heart disease than people who don't have those issues. So that's sort of the downside. The upside is that now there's also a significant body of research saying that people who are genuinely optimistic, not only do they live far longer, but not only is their heart healthier because of the positive emotions they're able to tap into more consistently, but it turns out that their chance of death for any reason is actually reduced significantly. I was talking to a couple audiences in Charlotte this week, and I said, your chance of being hit by a car is even reduced. And I said, why is that? Asking the audience, why is that? And I said, well, the simple answer is if you're a genuinely positive person or at least is able to turn a negative into a positive more quickly, you tend not to be as preoccupied with the problems of your life. So you're more aware in general, whereas if you're constantly preoccupied with kind of a relentless anxiety or chewing on issues and problems, you tend to be so internally focused you lose sight of the world around you. So I think part of what we have learned at HeartMath in the 18 or 19 years that we've been researching the connection between emotions and the heart is that the amazing design of the human system allows us to actually learn how to regulate our own heart fairly easily, and it's completely tied to learning how to regulate our emotions. So if we can become more aware of the negative states that we find ourselves in, the anxieties, the frustrations, etc., and practice some fairly simple techniques, we can shift our emotions, which in turn is very quickly shifts the patterns of our heart, which means our heart is not straining as much as we would if we were under stress. It means our brain is able to function better because the heart's sending it better information, if you will. And it turns out that learning how to generate more positive emotions, like the studies of optimism and other things have demonstrated, has a very profound effect on the health of every part of ourselves, mentally, emotionally, physically, even spiritually. So I think it's been an exciting time because many people, I'm sure many of these of the listeners right now, intuitively know that our emotions are absolutely tied with our health and well-being. But and we've probably many have seen some of the research, but it's been exciting to see just how much evidence. It's game over from the research standpoint. I mean, we don't need much more evidence. We just need now to practically do it.
Let's even take it the next step. I know you guys have also done some very interesting, so there's the personal coherence and resonance that is created through the different practices, but then you've also been documenting research that shows that we literally have an effect on those around us and their coherence, which then can affect their health. So it's almost like we create extended network of healthier people when we engage these practices. I wonder if you could share about that a bit.
Yeah, sure. Well, just to pick up on the word that you use, since that's something that we do use a lot, is the word coherence. And whether the person relates to the word coherence from a health standpoint or simply from the everyday language standpoint of, wow, what a coherent presentation that was, or, God, that guy was so drunk he couldn't utter a coherent word. We understand it kind of from a language standpoint. And also from our life experience, we know that when we are feeling good, and performing well, athletes would call that the zone. Psychologists would call it the flow. And we were very intrigued to see, is there a physiological correlate to that, to these what unfortunately are often random states? Athletes get into the zone but don't know how to get back into it. We have a day that we really feel in the flow, but it's hard to recreate that internal experience. And we found that it is repeatable, it is recreatable, and it has everything to do with the heart. And we learned that the heart is so dominant in the system from an electrical and rhythmic standpoint. And as you can get the rhythmic patterns of the heart to become more coherent or more synchronized, that has a significant effect not only on every cell in our body, but even on those around us. And this relates now to the second part of your question. Researchers way before us discovered that the electrical signal of the heart, which is commonly known as EKG or electrocardiogram, is such a powerful signal that not only does it travel instantaneously to virtually every cell in our bodies, every cell is receiving an electrical input every moment that the heart's beating, but that signal is so strong, the skin of our bodies is not a barrier. So that signal passes through our skin. And with current technology, we can measure the electrical signal of the heart several feet away from the body. And we're talking about an actual electromagnetic wave, not an aura or something kind of metaphorical, with something very tangible and very, very easy to measure with the right kind of equipment. And so that has some very interesting implications, because probably most people, if not all, have had the experience of walking into a room and instantly sort of picking up on the vibe of the room, if you will. In fact, we use that language. Or we use language like, boy, I walked in there and you could cut the tension with a knife. Well, the research is now saying there's real stuff that we're picking up. It's electromagnetic energy generated by the human system and very much tied into the emotional state of those people, of us. And so if the mood was very frustrated or angry, we can sense that even if we don't see the body language or even hear the words. And likewise, the opposite. If the mood or the energetic was very appreciative or loving or caring, we can often sense that and feel an instant, oh, wow, it feels great in here. This is what a great spot. And so it turns out that the heart is absolutely involved in what we are sensing. So it's our own heart that's sensing that in the room and generated by the other people. And, a simple example would be if you're even physically close to somebody, within a few feet of somebody who's really annoyed or frustrated or angry, it's hard not to feel it, right? I mean, you pick up that energetic. Likewise, if you're around someone who's very sympathetic, very warm, very compassionate, you tend to melt. You tend to feel, wow, what a great person this is. And so we're just giving some science to what people's everyday experience has been. But unfortunately, too often, sort of random experience. It kind of happens, but we don't know how to get it again, and certainly don't know how to repeat it. So it's been exciting to see some of that research confirming people's intuition and people's personal experience.
Fascinating, and it sort of points to the next revolution in healthcare. Has a lot to do with the providers as well. I mean, they get eight years of training in all the different biomedical approaches, but they don't have virtually any training in simple things like bringing their own system into coherence before they work with patients.
Exactly, and I think an irony of the medical training, and it's particularly true for doctors, but even for nurses too, is you're taught to sort of remain objective and not to get involved emotionally with the patient. And that's for good reason. I mean, if you get overly involved, you might be so sympathetic or sort of pitying their state that you are not able to remain objective enough to know what to do and to treat and to remain calm in the face of that. But and I think that's definitely true in the case of kind of immediate trauma. You know, if somebody's having a heart attack or somebody's standing there bleeding from a wound or an injury or something. But so much of healthcare today is about long-term care. It's about the time leading up to when they have the surgery, or in the time after the surgery, or it's in the time leading up to getting those tests that they're nervous about because of what the potential results could be, and how to deal with the emotional aftermath of getting the diagnosis or hearing the results. So there's this continuum of the healing process that is not just about a highly traumatic event, but it's the before and the after. And I think that's where many in healthcare are realizing there is, that because of that continuum, we need to be caring. It isn't okay just to be objective, because for the inner state of the person who's ill, it's not just a physical thing, right? There, whatever the physical thing is going on could be affecting all sorts of emotions in them. Of, you know, will I be able to function at my best after I heal? Will I heal? How does this affect my job? Is insurance going to even cover what I'm in the hospital for? What am I not able to do at my job? And is that going to be negatively impacted by the time I'm off with this illness that I have? So anyway, there's numerous things, let alone often the overcaring pressure of the family members who are themselves maybe in a worse state emotionally than even the person who may be ill. So there's all these issues that are all about the emotions associated with the illness or the injury, not just the sickness itself. And I think that's where more and more caregivers, particularly nurses, who we work with a lot in many, many hospitals around the states and even outside the U.S. now, I think nurses particularly pick up on that, are particularly sensitive to that, because they are the ones in the healthcare process that tend to have more time with the patient. You know, the doctor is in and out, usually, pretty fast, and taking a little too much credit for what's gone on, when it's, in fact, often the nurses that are the ones that are providing that environment of care leading up to the event and then especially in the aftermath. So I think this whole concept of putting out more care to the patient because they need that to heal is really gaining a lot of momentum and excitement. And I think by the same token, what many caregivers recognize is it's hard to do that if you're not doing it for yourself. Because if you're not taking care of yourself and not managing some of the own stresses that you have, independent of your job as a caregiver, what's going to be the quality of care that you bring to the patient? If you're worried about finances, worried about a relationship, your kids, whatever it may be, and that's kind of too much in your awareness and undealt with, that can't help but rob some of the effectiveness or the depth of the care that you want to give to the patient. So that dimension of, you know, the connection between one's own emotional state, their own ability to self-care, and therefore to translate that into more genuine, more authentic care in a healing context, I think is a lot of people are realizing that that's in all this discussion about healthcare reform. Rarely is this dimension discussed. And yet most caregivers know that's the bottom line of the whole thing. If we don't address that, you know, we can make all the regulations and reform all the policies we want, but the fundamental attitude of people towards each other is not going to be enhanced. So
sort of takes it to a whole other level of, in terms of our own awareness, when oftentimes we think of caregiving like, you know, taking care of somebody physically, or, you know, soothing them or saying the right thing. But if we're really, one of the most important things we can do is bring our own coherence and healthy field in a way to them, and then that's in itself just one of the deepest acts of caring. That's a deep reframe for people.
It is, and to again sort of underline from the research we said earlier, if the research is very clear that if we as individuals are in a negative emotional state, that does harm our health in all kinds of ways that can play out negatively. And conversely, if we're in a positive emotional state, that enhances our health in all kinds of ways that can play out in terms of our energy, our longevity, our well-being, our sensitivity to others. Well, it just stands to reason, if you're helping yourself a lot by being in a more positive emotional state, how could that not be more beneficial for someone else? And again, I think you don't even need the research to know that's true. I mean, if you pictured yourself in a hospital, which doctor or nurse would you want walking in the room? The one that had a genuine care, not an obsequious kind of, you know, overly, you know, sentimental kind of care at all, but just a genuine care for your well-being, versus the one that was sort of just all about the checklist, making sure everything was, all the procedures were done properly, and properly informed, properly educated, but without the level of care that recognizes the emotional state of that patient. So I think, again, it's, people are waking up to, of course, this is the way we should do things. So it's just fun to have some evidence.
I was going to say, I understand you've had some personal health issues that have fed into your overall perspective now. You mind sharing a bit about that?
Yeah. Over the last year, I had to have some surgery, and it was for a tumor, which luckily was small, and the surgery looked like it was going to be enough. And then I had some complications in some treatments that happened after the surgery, leading to a staph infection and a series of them finally getting into my blood, and I had to be hospitalized for the staph infection. And which is, you know, when it's in your blood, it's non-trivial. You got to go right to the hospital and be in, you know, put IV and antibiotics and all that kind of stuff, and try to track down why it's in there. And so it can be a fairly serious thing. And of course, there I was lying in the hospital bed, recognizing this thing that I was in the hospital for was a side effect of why I'd been in the hospital a few months earlier. This thing was not even the real thing. The real thing was, you know, the surgery for a few months earlier. And I think part of what I noticed, and I was in the hospital for 4 days, which is not a long stay, but enough to have a lot of different interactions with, you know, multiple doctors, multiple nurses, multiple aides, and, you know, radiology people and echocardiogram people, all kinds of caregivers, was, again, this sort of continuum or the spectrum of care. Some who, as soon as they walked in the room, was kind of like, oh, great, can't wait to see you, can't wait to get to know you, you just seem like a great person, I think you're going to take good care of me. And others that were like, tell me again why you chose healthcare, because it just seemed like there wasn't much of that care towards the patient who was anxious or, you know, unclear of what was going to be going on. And then in the aftermath of the hospital stay, there was much more interaction that I had to have, because I had to have what's called a PICC line in my arm for 6 weeks in order to have antibiotics infused into my blood twice a day, each process lasting a couple of hours. And that involved many interactions with everything from the insurance provider to the home nursing company that sent the home nurse over to do stuff for me, to the company that supplied all the supplies that we had to use to put the antibiotic in and everything else. I mean, there's a lot of stuff involved in this kind of a process. So, you know, dozens, if not hundreds, of more interactions over the next couple of months. And again, it was part of the thing that I experienced was, first of all, a tremendous amount of compassion for what the healthcare providers are going through. You know, nurses that would come to my house who, this was their second job, their main job was working full-time at a hospital, but they couldn't make it on that salary, so they had to have a second job, which was to be a home nurse. And so they would be squeezing it in between daycare and the night shift and everything else. And, you know, sometimes they weren't at their best, but I had a lot of compassion for them, because I thought, my God, here they're trying to be a caring person, and meanwhile burning the candle at both ends. And it kind of gave me the overall experience for myself over the past year has been one of a very sober view of the state of healthcare in the U.S., the pressures that healthcare providers are under, what the caregivers are under. They want to do right. They want to care. There's very few that I've met that don't want to care. They do. They wouldn't be in that profession. They wouldn't put up with what they put up with if they didn't. But they often feel so constrained and so inhibited and so shut down in their natural instinct to care. And so I felt much compassion, even at those moments where I wished they would have been a little more compassionate towards me, a little bit more caring towards my condition and some of the concerns I was having. Even so, I felt like, wow, there's a tremendous opportunity here to add care to the people who need it the most, which are the frontline caregivers, in my perspective. And what a difference that could make.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, I'm wondering, before we take a couple questions, I'd love for you to just share a bit about what's a nice, simple practice that people can start with, and maybe you can talk a little about the M-Wave as well as sort of a way to take it to the next level, but some nice, simple practices to bring yourself into coherence and build emotional resilience.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I've been sort of alluding to it without giving a technique through this call, and I think everyone knows that any time we even just focus on our breathing and just start to breathe a little more deeply, that brings a kind of calm or a kind of coherence to our system. I mean, people in sports know that. They do it. You know, people in the arts know that. They do it. And many of us probably have done various personal or spiritual practices that involve breathing to help stabilize our system. What HeartMath has added to that concept is the idea that while we are breathing in a steady rhythm, and part of our research has shown that if you're breathing for about 5 seconds in and about 5 seconds out, that's a pretty good rhythm. That's pretty natural and optimal for our system, for our nervous system, our heart, our lungs, our brain. So if you're doing about a 10-second breath, 5 seconds in, 5 seconds out, but adding to that, reflecting on something in our life that we really feel appreciation or gratitude for, then it's taken out of the realm of just sort of a mechanical thing like breathing into the realm of who I want to be, what I want to feel in my life. So I think if we add that dimension of this positive emotion, as I say, it connects us back to kind of our deeper self, our deeper soul, our deeper heart. But also what we've seen in our experience and our research is that any time you can engage a positive emotion and sort of reflect on something that really is meaningful to you, even if you're in a stressful situation, that can often shift your perspective just enough to look at that problem more objectively or with a fresh eye. And so the simple practice we teach, which is quick coherence, is to focus one's attention around the heart, to then breathe in this steady rhythm, as I said earlier, about 5 seconds in, about 5 seconds out, which is going to be a slower breath than most people would do, but it's a nice kind of refreshing, calming approach. And then, and most importantly, the third step being to consciously remember or re-experience a positive emotion, and appreciation, gratitude tend to be particularly powerful and transformative for people. But if you even can't find a feeling like appreciation, let's say you've had a really, really rotten day and you just can't find anything to appreciate that day, even remembering something that was fun or made you laugh, or even, in worst case, something that you enjoyed eating, like vanilla ice cream or something, you know, whatever, something that gives you a sense of fulfillment, a sense of positive feeling, that process, focusing around the heart, breathing in a steady rhythm, and then engaging a positive feeling, practiced over time and through a day and then made to be more sustained, can have a significant impact on one's health, on one's perception, on one's cognitive awareness and skill. So that's one of the fundamental things we teach at HeartMath. And part of what we learned back to the biofeedback concept is that as an individual does that simple process, focusing around the heart, breathing in a steady rhythm, engaging a positive feeling, what that does is it turns the rhythm of the heart from whatever chaotic or inefficient rhythm it was in because of the stress we may have felt into this beautiful, smooth rhythm that's highly efficient for the heart, but more importantly, really good for the whole body and good for the brain and good for everything. And so our technology, the M-Wave products, one that's the software version that you can run on a PC or a Mac, the other being the handheld device that's around the size of a cell phone, both technologies show you the feedback of how that technique is working for your heart. So what we found from the literally now tens of thousands of people who've used this is that the technique sounds good and does sound like it might be beneficial, but when you have that feedback that shows you that by practicing that, something significant and measurable is changing, that's really motivating and really helps people learn and anchor what they've learned and sustain what they've learned. So that's the technique. The technology is a great way to see and track your progress, but even if you didn't have the technology, the technique in and of itself has enormous value.
So simple and so practical, and I know you guys are also having some sort of a special right now on your M-Waves as well. Maybe if people want more information about that, just touch one on your keypad or punch it on the webcast, and we'll get your email over to Bruce's team over there. Maybe Bruce, say what is the special right now?
Sure. So it's a holiday sale up until Christmas. And basically the M-Wave handheld device, the personal stress reliever, is normally $199, and it's just $119 now during the sale period. And the M-Wave desktop, which is the software, the PC and Mac version, normally is $299, and during the sale it's only $199. So these are pretty significant discounts. We see a huge problem in the world of stress, and think this is technology that can really make a difference, so we're eager to get it out there and get it out to more people.
Great stuff. And so again, touch one if you want just more information from Bruce's team about that. So I'm going to, and if you have a question, I think we're already at the end, but maybe we can go 5 more minutes, Bruce. Is that okay?
That's fine with me, Stephen. Sure.
Okay, great. So if you have a question, touch 2, and I'll take one off the webcast. Ari asks about the music and its ability to heal the body and mind, as well as healing frequencies. Any what's the relationship with what you're talking about?
Well, it could be, when they say the music, I'm not sure if they're referring to music in general or music that HeartMath has created.
Music in general.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, I think, again, everyone's experience would be that certain types of music just affect us in very profound, very positive ways. And, you know, certainly there are many composers in the last 20 or 30 years that have attempted to design music in order to achieve certain healing effects. And I think there are many that do that. I think at the same time, it is a lot about the user's perception of the music. In other words, if you really love the music and the music's designed in such a way to be relatively harmonious, whether or not it's kind of New Age style, as we would often think of healing music, whether or not it's that style, when we feel uplifted or emotionally transformed by music, no matter what the style in a sense, it can have a very profound positive impact on our well-being, translated down to the level of ourselves. So I'm a big fan of using music that you like, that you find enjoyable, and it doesn't have to just be peaceful music. I want to make that distinction because I think it's not just about relaxing to heal. It's about feeling hope. It's about feeling positive in maybe dynamic, enthusiastic ways at times. It helps our energy be more proactive and more forward-moving. So there's certainly a lot of times when we're just learning how to relax through music or other modalities can be extremely helpful because of the tension we may have. But by the same token, we need to also kind of galvanize our energy to take charge of our well-being at times too. And so I'm a big proponent that it's not just about one style of music necessarily, but absolutely use music that you enjoy.
Both chill out and rock out. So mm-hmm. Nancy, you're live. Question.
I don't have a question. I have a comment. I've been a nurse for 31 years. I've done just about every type of nursing. I always had a second job until lately when my back totally gave out. And I want to thank you so much for your comments and your tribute. And it's a blessing. It's a long time coming. And I thank you very much for that.
Well, Nancy, thank you so much for those comments. I don't know if I hadn't been a patient this past year, I would have had quite the same level of appreciation and respect for what the job that nurses truly do. I've probably watched a few too many medicine shows on TV and think it's all about the doctors. And then when I became a patient, I realized it's all about the nurses to a large degree. I mean, doctors are very important, of course, but I have just enormous respect. I've gotten to meet hundreds and hundreds of nurses over the last number of years, and I have just great, great respect for what you do and the care and the dedication and the tirelessness that you put into your vocation. So thank you for what you've all been doing.
Okay.
Beautiful. Linda wanted to know, she says, please talk about the qualities of being present, bringing our presence to ourselves and our patients. What does that look like?
Well, that's a great question. We work very closely with a woman named Jean Watson, who is one of the luminaries in nursing and who speaks a lot about the importance of presence in the healing experience and creating a caring moment. And to me, and again, I'll talk as just a human being and the fact that I've been a patient, but I've obviously not been a nurse. But for me as a person, what I appreciate in another is their ability to just be there, to just listen, to not be going so fast that it seems that their agenda is more important than the moment that I'm in as a patient or as a human being. I think, you know, the simple things that we've heard of for centuries about loving kindness, that phrase has so much power when we think about it in the healing context, that what patient wouldn't want that? I mean, maybe there are a few crusty old patients that just don't want to be cared for in a sympathetic way or a compassionate way. But I think that itself is very key. I think part of what we've learned too, Stephen, and to the questioner, is that this concept of coherence brings our system to a state of internal balance. So we are simply far more aware. You know, I know in myself when I am in a state of deeper presence, I pick up more sensitively on the moods, the body language, the tone of voice of an individual, far more than when I'm half there but still carrying with me the stress from what I had to do just before I had this interaction, let's say. So to me, presence implies a deeper level of awareness that enables us to just be more conscious of who and what is around us, more sensitive to that, and therefore able to respond with more genuine feeling and more genuine care. So, I mean, we could talk for hours just about presence. It's a very deep and very thoughtful question. But I think it has a lot to do with just getting our system to a point, our own internal system, to a point of balance so that we can just increase our awareness and then be able to have that natural care that certainly every caregiver wants to do and probably every human being wants to do, and have that be more effortless and genuine.
Well, Bruce, we've kind of we've reached the end of our time. It always goes so quickly. But I really just want to honor you for the depth of work you've done over the years. It's clear in how you talk about these things. It's so you're bringing forward really important work, and I really honor you for continuing to lead the way forward to a new paradigm of healthcare in which we really take care of the deeper sources of care within ourselves and within our system. So thank you for sharing that with us here today.
Well, it was a real pleasure and an honor for me, too, and it was great to talk with you, Stephen, as well as to everyone who's on the call. So thank you very much.
Great. And HeartMath.com is it, right. We have HeartMath.org and .com, but I think you're specifically HeartMath.com.
Yes. Right. Yes, HeartMath.com describes the work in healthcare, the technology. HeartMath.org is for the research for those interested in education as well as underserved communities. But either of those websites, you'll learn a lot, and you can find access to the M-Wave technologies on either one as well.
Great. Thanks so much, Bruce. Great.
Thank you
very
much.
As Bruce leaves, we have the opportunity, if you'd like to stick around and connect with some other folks, we can put you into groups of four. We'll assume you want that if you stick on the line. And we're done for the day. It's been a great day so far. We've already gotten amazing feedback on the webcast and other places. So we got an even more full schedule tomorrow. We're beginning with Judith Orloff and Bruce Lipton and Ming-Tong Gu. In the morning, and we're going to be moving into having Joan Borisenko and Bernie Siegel. It's really going to be a fantastic day tomorrow, so I hope you can join us again tomorrow, or you can always catch up on the recordings. Jeff should have those up within 24 hours generally. So thank you so much for joining us, and if you stick around right now, we're just going to put you in groups of four so you can connect with other people, talk about what you've learned today or just whatever is on your heart and mind. And I'll be signing off and wish you well until tomorrow. Thanks so much.